John McClain in now, brought to you by Horn Solutions. I am doing a pump up every single hour for the Rockets game number two.
Hey, what happened to the last one?
Well, here's the first one. We wanted to reset the first one here. Here's the first one. We did one at 6, at 7 o'clock. I think the critical acclaim suggests that the first one was the best one so far. And here was that pump up early this morning. Listen, it feels to me like the whole city doesn't believe. It's one game. This team had the best record in basketball the whole season. They've got the MVP. They won 65 games. This team had the most successful regular season in the history of Houston sports. If we gave up after a game, the Astros wouldn't have the World Series championship on like two or three different occasions. It's one game. You know who lost game one also? The Astros lost game one on the World Series. You can bounce back. It's not about four. It's not about three or two. It's about one. Win tonight. One game tonight. Good effort right from the jump. A little bit less isolation. Get into the offense quicker. Let's get Chris Paul involved. Let's get Capella involved. Let's get the role players. You designed this team with the Golden State Warriors in mind. Let's focus on that. Let's focus less on Harden with the step back three a little bit early. He'll be fine. He'll produce. One game at home tonight.
Yes!
You're favored by two.
Yes!
Let's go!
Listen, I'll tell
get
you
one.
What. You know what? I think we just stumbled onto something here.
What?
I think you've got more rhythm than you might think.
All right, yeah. So that's the leaning contender right now in the clubhouse. John, is that
I never thought
you fired up?
Any other team that the Astros played was clearly better. I think the Warriors
are
clearly better.
I know.
How, John? How did you not listen to that pep talk?
But you got me you got me all fired up and gave me hope for tonight.
It's, you know what, John? What is it about basketball? And I'm not talking about this specific series because the Warriors are a super team, obviously. What is it about basketball versus the other sports that after a convincing loss or win in game one, it feels like no other outcome will ever be possible?
Any game.
And it's like every single series, even though you know it intellectually, you'll see like, oh, the Warriors crushed the Spurs last year in game one. You're like, well, this series is over. What is it about basketball that does that?
I don't think it's just basketball. I think it's all sports. And I think also because we're so close to the action, we see the guys more than we see guys up close and personal than other sports. We feel we're more invested emotionally. But plus here, everybody got their hopes up because of the regular season and because they have an advantage on the Warriors. But I think the Warriors are just too good. The Warriors blew, a 3-1 lead to Cleveland?
Yes.
And lost to the Cavs. And so then they went out and got Kevin Durant. They've only lost three games. They are, to me, one of the greatest dynasties in history.
All right. We can't have this negativity. Some might call it realism. Yeah. I'll call it negativism. We can't have this, John. You need another dose of a Mike Meltzer.
I've been in Houston so long, I always expect the worst.
What are we doing here? Who's the bet here?
Yeah, who's the bet?
Pump up the volume.
We're continuing the Jock Jams theme. Here is Mike Meltzer's 8 o'clock, 8:24 a.m. pep talk.
The Golden State Warriors are total frauds. They are absolute frauds. Kevin Durant joined this basketball team because it was the easiest to win. What's going
on here? I'm not telling you to turn your mic off.
Oh.
We messed this up. All right, go ahead. Sorry, restart. Keep your mic on. Or excuse me.
Hold on.
I apologize. Go ahead.
The Golden State Warriors are complete frauds. Frauds. Steve Kerr, everything's easy for these guys. It's always been easy. They got Kevin Durant. They drafted Draymond Green. He turned into a Hall of Famer, as Landry alerted me last week. A Hall of Famer. Make it not easy on these guys. Push them. The sports gods should be on your side.
I like the appeal to the gods.
They should be on your side. The Rockets have two guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame, James Harden and Chris Paul. At some point, the odds are going to go against the Warriors.
Get the hell out of my pep talk, Bill Simmons. I'll stomp you down like the nerd you are.
I cannot live in a situation in which this team goes meekly into that good night.
Mm.
Not this team.
That's right.
Not tonight. Not in game two.
Invoke Churchill. I like this one.
Again, it's not about winning four or winning three. You have to win this game. You have to win one game, and then we will recalculate how we feel tomorrow morning about this series. One game. Kevin Durant will not play the way he played on Monday night. Klay Thompson will not play the way he played on Monday night. As long as you cover him, that would help. Cover him.
You know what? Well, that's two things. I would say this. One, just actually playing defense, and it's not like they lacked for effort. They just lacked for communication, actually playing good defense, and then making shots within 5 feet of the rim. They were awful. They were horrendous on layups. The turnovers bit them. That would be the other one big thing, too, is just the turnovers.
How about not letting the shot clock expire?
Yeah, exactly.
Go quicker.
Or especially not let it three times.
Jacking it up at the last second.
Yeah. John, okay.
I feel like my blood pressure is a little high. I'm going to try to
That ease. Was pathetic.
What was wrong with it?
Letting the shot clock expire?
Oh, that. Okay. Oh, I thought you meant me.
I thought you were saying his pep talk.
Yeah, I thought you meant my pep talk. I got a little offended there.
Well, just don't ask me to grade it.
Okay. John, offensive tackle.
Yeah, you're a hard grader.
Lane Johnson from the Philadelphia Eagles. He had some choice words for the Patriots immediately after the Super Bowl. He was feeling himself. He had some time to reflect on it and calm down a little bit, and he basically doubled down on what he said about the Patriots. He was on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast, and he said this about the Patriots. Here's what pissed me off. The Patriots, obviously, I respect their coach. I respect Bill. I respect Tom Brady. But just because the way they won the Super Bowl is the Patriot way, is that how everybody else is supposed to do the same thing? No, it's not. And that's what I got mad at, the arrogance by them. And then here's where it gets interesting. There was obviously some stuff behind closed doors. Their owner talking bleep to our owner. Bill talking bleep to our head coach before the game. I'm not going to say it, but a lot of bleep kind of built up to that. And I just got tired of hearing about it, man, to be honest. Unquote. What did Bill Belichick say? Do you buy that Bill Belichick actually said something to Doug Peterson, or did Doug Peterson say something in the pregame speech that maybe embellished a little bit?
I think that I've never heard anything like that. And Johnson said he heard about it. He didn't say he heard it.
Yeah.
So I remember, and today you can't do it as much. Marv Levy, when he was with the Bills, was notorious for telling his team, did you read what so-and-so said in such-and-such papers? Sometimes he'd just make up papers because there was no internet. He said this about us, and he would use that tactic, and I'm sure others did too. But Lane Johnson, the Patriots have never asked anybody to win their way, and they've never been bragging about that's their way. That's the media calls it the Patriot way. But can you imagine Robert Kraft trash-talking Jeff Lurie? Or even Belichick with Doug Peterson. It sounds like a little motivation maybe Peterson and the staff used, and the players bought it hook, line, and sinker.
I think this, though, too. You know, sometimes the underdog or the up-and-comer is going to have a chip on his shoulder. Maybe Lurie and Peterson did actually feel talked down to. You know, like if Belichick comes up and does the equivalent of a tussle of the hair of Doug Peterson, you know, says, hey, sport, you guys got a hell of a squad there. You're really trying your hardest. You're trying so hard. And maybe Peterson interpreted it that way.
I just thought of this. And tell me if you ever had anything like this. In 1999, when the Titans played at Jacksonville in the AFC Championship game, the night before, they were having their team meeting. And Jeff Fisher said, you know, we're the underdog, even though we've beaten them two times, all that. And he said, I just want you guys to see this film.
Yeah.
And he left the room, turned on a film with the Jaguars making a Super Bowl video. And everybody went ballistic because they thought it was in the week before the game.
Right.
He never said it wasn't. So after the game, I remember interviewing Bruce Matthews about it, and he talked about them making that video last week. And I said, Bruce, you know they made that in June, right?
Yeah.
And you should have seen the look on his face, and all the players thought that they had made it the previous week. And it was such – I don't know why you need motivation, but teams do. And I just can't imagine Bill Belichick doing something like that because he's just so all business and careful. You know, he never utters a word that is going to be antagonistic toward an opponent. I sure can't see him doing it before the Super Bowl.
Which season was it that they just did the documentary on for the Oilers?
93.
The 93 season.
And which was great.
Remember Warren Moon? We had Warren Moon on talking about how he's like, you know what, honestly, I didn't know a lot of this stuff was going on. Because it's true. Stuff like this happens and you don't realize it's going on because you're focused on your own challenges. You don't realize the offensive coordinator and the defense coordinator hate each other because the players aren't in those
meetings. Even
though
we ask him about it every single day, that's hogwash.
Oh, really?
That was chronicled by everybody.
Well, let me say this, though, because as far as that song controversy went, that was done for charity in June. And I didn't have a clue about any of it. Like, some players on the team did it. I have never heard of it.
You weren't in the middle of it?
Nobody, like Jeff Fisher, for whatever charity it was for, like, Jeff Fisher did him a great a great service, because I'd never heard of it until it was a week. He did it the week before, the week of the game leading up to it. Because I know our defensive line coach, John Pease, came into the meeting and like flipped out about it. Was like, what are you doing? You're affecting other people's lives. You're doing that talking trash. You're giving them bulletin board material. And I remember Gary Walker's like, coach, we did that in June. Here's the infamous song.
Hey, you, what you gonna do? 49ers, what you gonna do? Ravens, tell me what you gonna do? Jets, what you gonna do? Steelers, what you gonna do? Cowboys, what you gonna do? When the Jags come with you? Falcons, what you gonna do? Browns, what you gonna do? Carolina, what you gonna do? Them Jags coming with you.
Listen to the whole schedule.
Is that you?
You're thinking Jags, here they come.
Oh, that's right. And then so... This is what we heard during the game. I still didn't.
Let's listen to one verse.
Okay.
Cersei. Leon Cersei?
Miami Hurricane.
A riverside, I play, don't make me. You can't ride a lineman. I eat them for lunch. Hit them off with the 1-2 punch. Cersei, take them down. AGL bound, Super Bowl bound. All about that Super Bowl ring. Hit them off with the bling, bling, bling.
Ah! Leon Cersei might have coined the phrase bling bling.
I kind of like that.
Not
that
bad.
It wasn't a
bad.
Pretty good song.
Not except bad. Again, like this was before YouTube and everything. It wasn't so easy just because honestly, I kind of knew about the song. I'm going about my merry way during the week. And I hadn't even heard the song by the time we played the game, but I just kept hearing Titans all over the field, like after every play, McNair.
This is hilarious.
McNair broke off like a 40-yard touchdown run in that game, and I was hearing uh-ohs during the run. Yeah. And we're like, uh-oh, what is going on with this uh-oh business? And
I can't believe I worked with you for 5 years, and this is the first time I'm hearing about all of this. This is great.
I don't think I've ever even heard the song.
This video is so disappointing, though.
Yeah.
No, it's a great highlight tape. It's just they keep showing Mark Brunell's picture, and I keep hoping he's going to bust a verse.
It wasn't like a whole team effort the way the Super Bowl shuffle was. It was a few guys that knew somebody that was doing a charity or something, or knew a rapper, and they got into it. So yes, but they did. Jeff Fisher. That was a masterful job of Jeff Fisher.
That was a good job.
Jeff Fisher won all the psychological mind tricks in that series between the Jaguars and the Titans.
You know what's weird? Sometimes sports is kind of strange because, and John, you know Jeff Fisher very well. I genuinely think Jeff Fisher was a very good football coach for most of his tenure with the Titans. I know people will say he wasn't, you know, he wasn't above 8-8 much, but if you look at his resume, the postseason, all that, I think objectively you would say Jeff Fisher was a good to very good coach. And then by the end with the Rams, he was just flat out bad. I mean, just bad. When you look at the difference between Goff 2 years ago versus last year, there's no better evidence of what coaching means in the NFL than that difference. Like, did he just get worse as a coach? I guess that's the only way I can explain it.
Well, as Goff, most rookie quarterbacks are going to be better the second year. They brought him in a left tackle, a center, and three new receivers. That helped. And also, they had a better coach because Fisher had an offensive coordinator who I'd never heard of.
Same.
And Jeff was a pretty conservative coach who liked to run the ball a lot. And when he had Eddie George and Steve McNair, he was able to run the ball a lot. He had Javon Kearse. He had a lot of talent with the Titans, and they made the most of it. But with the Rams, they had a lot of draft choices that they didn't convert into the type of talent that they had with the Titans.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think there's one thing, too, with Jeff Fisher that maybe is a little bit like what happened with Denny Green. Yeah, you just kind of lose your fastball.
Okay.
And with Denny Green, you know, I knew players that were on those great Vikings teams. There came a point where all of a sudden, like, all of Denny Green's assistants were buddies of his, you know, and cronies. And it's just the same way Jeff Fisher ends up with his son on the staff, an offensive coordinator that nobody's ever heard of. Just a whole lot of, I don't want to say mailing it in, but you just stop caring. You stop being quite as cutthroat. And when you lose that edge and you're coaching at the highest level, things, it's not college where you can rest on your reputation and your recruiting prowess and have younger people take the mantle. You've got to be really sharp and on focus. And that's why I wonder a little bit. There are certain elements of the Patriots right now where it seems like Belichick. Belichick maybe losing his fastball might mean he's still throwing 95.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's a few little elements of those have crept in.
Matt takes on the way. I have one big question for John about Texans OTAs. To me, what I think is the most significant storyline about what they're going to be starting next week. Also, It's been 2.5 hours into the show. One of the stories we have coming up next, to me, is the wildest story in sports happening this week, which might make you appreciate your marriage a little bit more.